Now, we're just finishing volume 13 and we're on January the 28th, 1922. Is that okay? Now, the messages at the very end of volume 13 are extremely important. And you could get my diagram back to me if you're ready. So the first one is that Jesus opened many founts in his divine will. Okay. So Louisa said, I was praying and my sweet Jesus drew me to himself and transforming me completely into myself, into himself, he told me. Now look at what fusing is. Transforming completely into him. And he said, my daughter, let us pray together. Now, Matthew 18, verses 19 and 20 says that if two of you agree concerning any matter, I will ratify it in heaven. Okay, that's when two of you pray. That's Matthew 18, verses 19 and 20. This is January the 28th, 1922, volume 13. So he said, let us pray together so as to hold heaven in our power. Look at it. If you pray in the divine will, you hold heaven in your power. Isn't that amazing? And we will prevent the earth from falling even more into the current of evil. Now, there's the power of praying in the divine will. And if you can't pray with other people, you can pray with Jesus. You pray with him in the divine will. Okay. So we prayed together, and then he added, while on earth, my humanity saw itself as very narrow before the divinity. That means that he was looking at the limitations of humanity before the divinity. Okay? And since it was inseparable from the divinity, because he was divine and human, I did nothing but enter into the immensity of the eternal will. So here he's telling us that he fused in the divine will all the time. Okay. And because he was divine as well as human, he was able to open founts for the good of creatures. Now, a fount is a source. It's a source of something. So in fact, since they were being opened by a man god, I could give the human family the right. Now, the rest of us might open a fount, but you couldn't give somebody else the right to use it. Okay, he could give us the right to approach these founts and to take whatever they wanted. But you can only do that if you fuse in the divine will. This is January 28, 1922, volume 13. Therefore, I formed, in other words, he made, the fount of love. Look at the list he's going to give you now. The fount of prayer, the fount of reparation, the fount of forgiveness, the fount of his precious blood, and the fount of glory. And he's given us, when we fuse in the divine will, the right to enter these founts and use them for God's glory and for the betterment of the human beings. Okay. Now, this means that overflowing from him were these founts. Okay, so that's John 7, verses 37 to 39, that out of your own heart will flow founts of living water. Okay, living water means divine grace, of course. Now, do you want to know who agitates these founts? In other words, stirs them up so as to make them rise and overflow in such a way that the whole earth will be inundated. Now, inundated means flooded. Okay, so what on earth could agitate these founts that he has created and has given us the right to actually use? He said, it's the soul who enters my will. So that's fusing in the divine will. So as she enters, if she wants to love, she approaches the fount of love. And by having or even placing the intention to love, now I think that is more than brilliant. You mightn't have time to go down a particular route, but he says, place the intention, you're grand. Isn't it fantastic? Even by placing the intention, she agitates the fount. Being agitated, the waters swell, overflow, and flood the whole earth. Sometimes this agitating is so intense that the waves, you'd have to use the word also, rise up high and touch heaven and flood also the celestial fatherland. So heaven and earth flooded, okay? So if she wants to pray, repair, ask for forgiveness for sinners or to give me glory, she agitates the founts of prayer, reparation or forgiveness, and they rise and overflow and flood everyone. How many goods did my humanity not ask for man? I left the doors open, that's terribly important, so that they might enter with all ease. He has made it so easy for us to actually access everything that he has done for us. Okay, but how few there are who want to enter. And that's his lament all the time. Okay. So is that okay? We enter into the divine will. All these founts are there. You can use them as much as you want, which is really absolutely fantastic. Okay. So January the 30th, 1922. Now, his truths are new creations. Now, he repeats this in different ways with different insights in different parts of this revelation. That means in different volumes. And I just want to say to you, since you've all been studying, that if you think that the end of study has come, you've forgotten about it. Because one of the great things to do that will make you a master of these texts is to compare subject with subject. To compare, like he speaks about the truths as new creations here and go to all the other places where he speaks about the same thing and pick it all up. Then you've got all the evidence. Therefore, you can speak about this. And that's one of the things that the Lord wants me to get everybody to do, so that you own it. You're not dependent on somebody else because somebody else, a famous or infamous name, says this is so. It's so because you know it yourself, you found it. Do you know what I mean? And therefore you own the text. So there's lots of places where he does this. And he does this with many subjects as well. Gives it to you in different places and he elaborates on it in different ways. Okay. So Louisa says, as I was in my usual state, my adorable Jesus came and seeing me all reluctant to manifest and write what he tells me with such an imposing look as to make me tremble, he starts talking. Okay. Now, what stimulates this message is Louisa not wanting to write. We're in volume 13. She's no longer permitted any excuses. Okay. And so Jesus has to tell her something which is vital for us who know this text. He says, my daughter, my word is creative. When God said, let there be light, there was light. When God said, let us make man in our own image, man was made in his image. And that was that. When I speak, making known a truth that belongs to me, it's nothing less than a new divine creation that I make in the soul. Now, what is difficult for us to actually take on board is the fact that when this message is spoken into us, he's also making new creations in us. And that's why we've got to keep reading and studying the text all the time. And the more we do that, the more deeply we actually enter into the message. And just as when I created the heavens with one single fiat, I stretched them out and studded them with billions of stars. And the incredible thing is, his fiat was just one yes, let it be. And the astrophysicists and the astronomers have now come to a very wonderful point, which they call a singularity. That means a single point. And they know all creation came out of that single point. They just don't know it was spoken. They just don't know that, but they've got so close. It's absolutely fascinating. And he's saying it here. It all came from this one, yes, let it be. So much so, there's not one place on the earth from which this heaven cannot be seen. And if from some points it could not be seen, it would be a dishonor for the creative power who can do everything perfectly, of course. And some would say that the creative force did not have the power to extend everywhere. Now, why is he saying that? Because in the same way, my truths, what he's revealing here and what he has revealed in the scriptures, okay, are more than heavens, which I would want to make known to all, from one end of the earth to the other. Just as the heavens are seen throughout the whole earth, he wants all creatures to know this as well. To make them pass from mouth to mouth like many stars, to adorn the heaven of the truths that I manifested. So here's a big hint that this message has got to be spread throughout the ends of the earth. Okay. If the creature wanted to hide my truths, it would be as if she wanted to prevent me from creating the heavens. Now, he will tell us, you see, that he's creating new heavens and stars, and he's using all this imagery about what he's doing in us. Okay, so that if we don't let this message pass to other people, he says we're preventing him from creating new heavens and everything in them. It's a very interesting way of putting it, okay. And so by the secret that she would want to keep, she would dishonor me. And if someone wanted to prevent others from looking at the heavens, at the sun and all the other things created by me so as to make me known, so we would be preventing something so massive we couldn't comprehend it. Ah, my daughter, he said, the truth is light. Now, 1 John 1:5, God is light. So 1 John 1:5, God is light. John 14:6, I am the way, the truth and the life. So God is light, God is life, God is truth, God is love. They're all aspects of the same person. So, my daughter, the truth is light, and light extends by itself. Now, even if you go to some of the oldest manuscripts in the church, written by the saints and the early church fathers, they've all used the same expression, that when you come to sort of understand the scriptures more deeply or understand by going through prayer, it's called enlightenment. That means you have received the light of truth. They've used that expression from the very beginning of the church. We called it enlightenment. You've received the light of the truth. And we even use that expression in ordinary everyday life. I saw the light, meaning I saw the reality of what was going on. So the truth is light, and light extends by itself. But in order for it to extend, it is necessary to make it known. Now, when he says light extends by itself, it's fascinating if you come down in the morning and there's daylight. It's a bit difficult at the moment. But if there's daylight out there, it will have got past the curtains and past the crevices. It will have got in. If there was the remotest space, it will have got in. Okay, he says it extends by itself. That light seeks to destroy darkness. So it extends by itself, but in order for it to extend, it is necessary to make it known. The rest it'll do by itself. Now, I find that absolutely brilliant. If you're willing to tell anybody else about divine will, if you're willing to teach anybody else about divine will, he says, just tell them, it'll do its own work. In other words, you don't have to be clever doing this. You don't have to be a know-all. You don't even have to understand all the text. You don't have to understand the whole message or anything. Just give them what Jesus says and trust the grace that is in you and the grace that's in them. It's brilliant. I just want to liberate, because the Lord is saying I have to liberate people to become teachers, you see. And when I asked him, how will I create teachers? You know what he said? He's got a great sense of humour. He says everything reproduces according to its own kind. He said, you're a teacher, you produce teachers, that's it. He said, that's why I'm using it this way. If you're a doctor, I'd use it in a completely different way. But it makes total sense, doesn't it? Yeah. And if you're called to teach, then it's teaching that's got to come out of you and out of your own pupils, because pupils become teachers. You know, I mean, the logic of it is so clear that you'd wonder why it took you so long to get it, you know. February the 2nd, 1922, the divine will is seed. Now, this subject is brought up many times in these writings. So it's you'd take the word seed and you'd start looking up where it was all over the place. Okay. Now, Jesus used the term seed for the word of God in the gospel as well. Do you remember in Matthew's gospel, the parable of the sower and the darnel and all the rest of it? It's the word of God is seed. And so it has to be planted in us and it has to produce fruit. It's fascinating. So he's saying the same thing here as well. Okay. So this is February the 2nd, 1922. If you go back to, and I want you to write this down before you would do any of that. Write down January the 25th, 1922. January the 25th, 1922. The truths are divine seeds is taught there. And this is February. Okay. So it means you only have to go back a small little bit and you find that the Lord has been teaching. In my book, it's only two pages. Okay. That he's already brought up the subject of seed, but you've had a long holiday in between that and this, and you mightn't remember, you see. And this is where we've got to cross-reference as often as we can. Is that all right? So if you don't fully grasp what he's saying here, you go back to there where he introduced it. Is that okay? And he will bring it up again. All right. So the divine will is seed. Now, in the gospel, he says the divine word is seed. But the divine word became incarnate and had the divine will absolutely ruling his life. So the divine will is the essence of God. Okay. If you go down to the end of this message, to the third last line of the message that is February the 2nd, 1922, you go to the third last line. He says, my will is I. My will is myself. Do you see it? Yeah, because your will is the essence of you and the divine will is the essence of God. Okay. So just to see where it's actually going. So Louisa said, this morning my beloved Jesus came, all goodness and sweetness. He was carrying a rope around his neck. Now she actually describes this slightly awkwardly. And he had an instrument in his hand. Now she's not completely sure what the instrument is. As if he wanted to do something. And then he removed the rope from his neck and he put it around mine. So that means whatever's binding, he was going to bind her. Then he fixed the instrument in the centre of my person and with a ruler with which he made rotate, okay, through a little wheel that was in the centre of the instrument, he measured me all over. Now, there's plenty in the scriptures about the Lord using a measuring line to Israel, okay? And I think that must be what I wrote down here, Ezekiel 42, verses 15 to 19, and Zechariah 2, 1. So the first one is Ezekiel 42, 15 to 19, and Zechariah 2, 1, the measuring line. And you'll also find it in 2 Corinthians 10, 12. When the Lord takes the measuring line to his people, he's looking for something. And when he measures the whole people, he's looking for the people doing the will of God. Okay. So 2 Corinthians 10, 12. Okay. So he measured me all over to see whether he would find all the parts of my person as equal. Now, it's very awkwardly put. He's trying to see, has the divine will taken over everywhere that she hasn't kept a little department for herself? We're very good at it. We might give God two thirds, but then, you know, I've a right to the rest of it. You know, or we might give God a good bit of our time, but he's not having it all, you know. So he's trying to find out, has she really given everything? He knows already, but he's trying to teach her something by doing this. He was all attentive on looking at whether the ruler in rotating would find perfect equality. He's looking for order, the divine order, you see. That's what it's all about, putting us into the divine order, all of us. I mean, 100% of me. I don't mean all of us. human beings, is looking for 100%. And as he found it, that's what Louisa says, he heaved a sigh of great contentment, saying, had I not found her equal, I would not have accomplished what I want. At any cost, I am determined to make of her a portent of grace. That means that every single part of her being is given over to the Lord. Isn't that absolutely incredible? Now, he could have said that in two sentences, but he went through this rotation business because that's why I drew a thing for you. He's going to talk about the rotation thing. And you have to, can you guess what the little wheel is? Well, if he talked about, okay, if I'm a little wheel, and if he talked about a great wheel, would you know what the great wheel was? Yeah, and what's the little one? My will. It's the little wheel. He was measuring through the little wheel if the human will had really been totally given to the divine. Okay. And when he finds it, he's absolutely thrilled because he can make a portent of grace out of her. Okay. Now, that little wheel, which was in the centre, because it's in the centre of your being, seemed to be a little circle of sun. Now, she calls everything sun. The sun is a source of light, a little circle of light. And Jesus gazed at himself within it. Now, if the human will really is genuinely handed over to the divine, you are in the image of God, because he made you in the image of God, and he's bringing us back into that order. Isn't that correct? So you should be able to see it. Just as you can have family members present and you say, God, isn't he the spitting image of him? I mean, we had a family gathering on the day after Christmas, and I looked at my brother talking to his sons, and there was one of them in particular, and I said, my God, he'll never die as long as that fella is born, is alive. And then my sister, who was sitting beside me, said, but he is in the image of our father. We were actually seeing three generations absolutely identical. Three men. It was incredible. And it's this thing that you can, we could see the image of our father in his only son. And we could see the image of him in one of his sons. He has four sons. Okay. Jesus sees himself in us when we've handed over to the divine will. I just want to give you the logic of it, you know, that it's not difficult once you just illustrate it. So he gazed at himself within it to see whether his adorable person would appear as whole. Now, as whole means if you take his attributes of patience and kindness and love and all the rest of it, if one of them was left out, his image is distorted. It's like seeing a photograph and there's a blotch on it. His image had to be whole and complete so that all his attributes are actually manifested within that little circle. Okay. And since it did appear, he was all contempt and he seemed to pray. In the meantime, another little wheel of light descended from heaven, a corresponding one from the earth. The earth meets the heaven meets the earth. Similar to the one which I had in the centre of my person. And without detaching its rays from heaven, they identified with each other, and Jesus impressed them in me with his most holy hands, and he added, for now, I have made the incision. I have placed the seal, and I will take care of developing what I have done. Now, just there, I want you to write CF, volume 14, September 5, volume 14, September 5, 1922. Because there he's going to explain the seal. Here he's just saying, I've placed the seal, and you will ask, what is the seal? There he's going to actually explain it. Now, this is what he does all the time in these writings. He drops a seed message and he'll come back and he'll develop it. Okay. So look at the number of words we've had already tonight that you could develop in a huge way. Okay. So Louisa said, I remained amazed and I don't know what that was. I just understood that in order for Jesus to operate in us, it takes the highest quality. Now, I've put John 14:21, you in me and I in you, both completely one, because that's what you're looking at here. Otherwise, he operates at one point of the soul and we destroy it at another point. So here's the Lord working on me with humility or something, and I destroy it with impatience. So that's where we can come a cropper. But you see, because her entire being was really given over to him, he was not having that problem. Okay. 21. Unequal things are always annoying and defective, she said. And if one wants to place something on them, there is the risk that the unequal side may let it fall to the ground. Now, that's just her not realizing really what she's saying. She'd say if something is unequal, it'll topple over. A soul who's not always the same, one day wants to do good, and another way will bear everything, and another day will no longer be recognized. She is indolent and impatient. Now, again, this is with your exercise for tonight. Beside that, I want you to put CF, January the 30th, 1906, Volume 7. Because there, in that text, he was saying that if you're not stable in doing good, you won't go anywhere. And the stability was to be the whole of your being given. Okay. And that's what she's referring to here. She's remembering it. Yeah, and this is volume 13, and she's remembering that message from volume 7. So that's January the 30th, 1906, volume 7. So I just wanted to introduce you to that new aspect of study. After this, Jesus came back, and having drawn me into his will, he said to me, my daughter, as the seed is cast to the earth, okay, so the divine will is seed. That's what he's talking about here. In the previous message, it was the divine word, okay, cast into the earth. You've got Matthew 13, the seed sown in the ground. The earth, and we're the earth, of course, that the seed is sown in. The earth makes the seed that is sown germinate and multiply. My will, which is the seed, extends more than the earth. It casts the seed of my volition into souls, and it makes many other images similar to me germinate and multiply. Well, if you put beside that John 10, verses 10 to 16, Jesus said, I have other sheep that I must bring into the fold. And so one of the things he does with us in divine will is to open us up that the rest of the fish have to be collected from the sea, or the sheep have to be collected into the fold, whatever image you want to use. Okay. So we cannot be unconcerned about the redemption of the world. So my volition makes my children, they're the children of the divine will, germinate, and it multiplies them. However, know that the acts done in my will are like the sun. Everyone takes the light and the heat and the good that the sun contains. So the acts done in the divine will, everybody's going to get them as well. It's for everybody, past, present and future. Okay. Nor can anyone prevent somebody else from enjoying the goods. Without anyone defrauding anybody else, all enjoy it. All are the owners of the Son. Everyone can say the Son is mine. Now, this is acts done in the divine will. It's a wonderful piece here. In the same way, the acts done in my will, more than the Son, are wanted and demanded by everyone. So that would be unconscious on the part of most people. All they know, most human beings, I put my hand on the tummy and I say, most human beings have an ache down here, and it says, I want something and I don't know what I want. And that ache sends some people into drink and drugs and all kinds of stuff, sends other people into the deserts to become saints, and it sends everybody to heaven. It depends on how you use that ache, but that's the beginning of somebody reaching out either to heaven or hell. to make a decision to go one way or the other. It's that ache. That's why he says they all want it. If people knew what, if they knew consciously what they could receive from us praying in the divine will, they would definitely want it, you know.
If you read Augustine's sentence, you've made us for yourself, you've made us with an ache.
Yes,
for you.
That's
unless
right.
Unless we answer that ache in the right way.
That's right.
We won't be.
Yeah, this pain in the depths of
ache.
Yeah, this pain in the depths of our being. Mm. Yeah, and everybody has it. Mm. Yeah, absolutely everybody has it. So the sun is mine. So the whole human race, past, present and future, can claim the acts that we do in the divine will. Isn't it wonderful? So in the same way, the acts done in my will are more than the sun, are wanted and demanded by all. The past generations await them so as to receive the dazzling light of my will over everything that they have done. The present awaits them so as to feel... fecundated is a terrible word, isn't it? Fertilized and invested by this light. The future ones await them as the fulfillment of the good that they will do. In sum, my will is myself. So the divine will is God. And the acts done in my will always go round within the endless wheel of eternity to become life, light and heat for all. So he's introduced the endless wheel of eternity, and now we finish volume 13 with this endless wheel of eternity, and that's the one that I tried to draw. See, could we make some sense out of it? Okay, it's a very important message. So, this is February the 4th, 1922. The souls who live in the divine will take part in the eternal activity of the divine will by going around within it. Okay, now when you get up beyond volume 20, this will become your everyday food, because Louise is talking about it all the time. It's fascinating. So Louise says that Jesus came, my daughter, the souls who live in my will, okay, are the little wheels that rotate within the great wheel of eternity. And what I say is, think of a Swiss watch. And you've got all these little wheels, but there's one major wheel that's running the whole thing. So my will is the motion and the life of the wheel of endless eternity. Okay. Now, as they enter to pray, love, operate and everything. So this is us going around inside of the divine will. Okay. As we do this, what I've drawn here is exactly what's written here. Okay, you want to show that to Lloyd? He hasn't seen it. So as they enter into my will to pray, to love, to operate, etc., the wheel of eternity makes them go around within its interminable circumference. So we're inside of it. Now, when you get to the volumes over 20, Louisa will say so often, it's endless. It's endless. I don't see any way out. There's no possibility of getting out. Now that she was really locked into the divine will permanently. And it was just her amazement in saying, and Jesus said, yeah, there's no way out at this point because you're living heaven on earth already. Yeah. So you're living within its interminable circumference. And since in that wheel they find all that has been done, must be done, and all that should be done but is not done. Now, look at all the things. You're supposed to fill in all the gaps and fill in all the voids, okay? So as they rotate, number one, they cast light. So that's what I have on some of these here. You actually cast light. And you cast divine waves, okay, into what has been done and must be done, giving divine honour to the Creator in the name of all. And they redo what has not been done by creatures. Now, you're not doing this consciously. The very fact of entering and fusing in the divine will, this is being done. You're not actually conscious of that. You can make yourself conscious of it if you want to, but I prefer to leave him to do his own job. So, and they redo what has not been done by creatures. Oh, how beautiful it is to see the soul enter into my will. That's your fusing. And as she enters, the great wheel of eternity winds her up. I love the expression, because really it's the image of the Swiss watch you're looking at. To make her go round within its great expanse. And the little wheel does its eternal rounds. Okay. The winding by the great wheel puts her in communication with all the divine windings. It's the fact that you have fused, you are put in communication with all that God is doing. This is God's work. This is not our work. And while she goes round, she does all that her Creator himself does. Isn't that absolutely amazing? Therefore, they are as though the first and the last to be created by me. The first because you can enter into the very first things that God has done, and last because you also do enter into the very last things that he has done. Because in going around, they find themselves at the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. That's of all history and of all creation. So, because of that, they will be the crown of the whole human family. That's number one. They will be the glory of the whole human family is number two. They will be the honour of the whole human family. That's three. They will be the substitution for all. That's number four. And number five, they will be the return to God of the whole order of things created by him. Isn't that absolutely incredible? That's why it's actually good to list them. One, two, three, four, five. This is what's being done. Because as you get used to fusing in the divine will, you may forget that there's something incredible actually happening. Yeah, because we get so used to something that you can just sort of say it and not realise the importance of what is being done. Therefore, let your rounds be continuous in my will. So the fusing needs to be continuous. I will give you the winding. He says, you want it, I'll do it. So he does the work. And you will be ready to receive it, won't you? Poor Louise was supposed to get that on first hearing. Then he added, you have not spoken about all the rounds of the little wheel. They see the little wheel of your will. Now, this is one of the things about these writings, is that if you didn't know at the beginning that the little wheel was your will, you get it in the end, because he does actually give it to you. And if you get stuck on something, just persevere with the reading and it comes up. Okay. The little wheel of your will does within the great wheel of eternity. You in me and I in you. That's the John 14, 21 thing. Louisa said, how could I speak of them if they didn't know? And he said, as the soul enters into my will, even with a simple adhesion, with an abandonment, I wind her so as to make her go around. So he says, even with the slightest hint that you want to go in, he'll take it as done. Isn't that incredible? Yeah. So one of the things I do if I'm very busy or my head is too full or whatever it is, I put my hand on some of the divine will prayers and I say, Lord, there's no possibility of me going through that. But I would like to do it with you in your will. And so I place the intention and I leave it there. Walk off. Instead of burdening yourself with something you've actually got no time to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's terribly important to say that. Because we have the terrible propensity to stuff ourselves. And I must say this and I must do that. And it's got to be sort of me consciously doing it. Otherwise it's not done. He says, no, even a hint. I think that's brilliant. Yeah, it's even a hint. Even an abandonment, you know.
And he just painted the picture of the light using the smallest gap to get in.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's what he's saying. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, in the middle of your work and everything, you're caught up. And if even for a moment you just remembered, oh, Lord, I'd love to do that. Go on. Isn't that fantastic? You see, I find it very liberating when you accept the freedom that he's giving to you. But I'm always afraid if a person feels I have to do all the prayers and I have to do all this, because I've actually heard people in divine will feeling very burdened. Yeah, feeling I have to do this. I must do this. You know what I mean?
It's far more liberating than
that. Sorry?
It's far more liberating than
that. Oh, totally, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Even with Eucharistic adoration, you don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything except fuse yourself in the divine will and let him do everything. Yeah. Yeah. But the point is, if you can't, for example, if you can't do an hour's adoration that isn't the time in the day, what do? Send your guardian angel down.
Kind of
he has all the time there is.
It puts flesh on, and Jesus cooperates with those who love him.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so.
Oh, absolutely.
So inadequate that our slightest gesture lets him in. And
absolutely. Yeah. It's like what he says about dying sinners. If they even kiss a crucifix or look at it, he'd forgive them. You know, we just don't give him the credit for being divine love. Do you know what I mean? But I just want to say that to make sure none of us would feel burdened, because you can give lots of prayers in the divine will. And you might feel, I have to say half of these or a quarter of these, but you don't have to say anything except thy will be done. Or not my will, but thine be done. So a simple adhesion, I think that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or an abandonment. I wind her so as to make her go round. But do you know how many times she goes round? She goes round as many times for as many thinking intelligences, for as many gazes of that creatures give, for as many words as they speak, for as many works as they do, and as many steps as they take. You say, wow. So we couldn't even cope with thinking about that. In other words, he's saying that anything that happens in the spirit, it's instantaneous. You know, they go around at each divine act, at each motion, at each grace which descends from heaven. In sum, they form their round in anything that is done in heaven and on earth. The rounds of these little wheels are fast and rapid. You see, anything in the spirit is very rapid. Why? Because there's no time. So they cannot calculate them. But I count them all. First, take the glory and the eternal love that they give me, and then to fuse all the eternal good and to give them the capacity of surpassing everything and to be able to embrace everybody and become the crown of everything. I don't know how often I've said, no, we can't improve on this. You know what I mean? It seems to get more and more wonderful as you go along.
Even remarkable.
Even remarkable. Yeah. So there's volume 13 finished with absolute, you know, lights blazing. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did want to do that for you there. I don't always do it, give you cross references to say that text enlightens this one, and to get more insight into that, you need to go into that one. Because that's another level of study. Because there's an amazing number of ways you can go at this text. Yeah.
Of course, that happens more easily for you because you're teaching the Bibles again and again.
I'm also teaching them simultaneously.
Yeah, correct, yes. So they tie up.
But because I'm teaching them simultaneously, I now don't know what I'm quoting. But I was quick enough to say we did that in volume 7.
Yeah.
But it is good. It's good to realise that the cross-referencing actually deepens the whole thing, deepens your understanding. Okay, so let's begin in volume 14. And Louisa says, my love and my life, guide my hand and be together with me. So she's asking the Lord for help. So I'm going to go down to February the 2nd. Is that okay? What did I say? Ah, yeah, it's number 4, whichever it is. It's wishful thinking on my part. Okay. So the heading says, love, wandering and rejected, bursts into sobs. You have to realise this is divine love looking for a response from the human race. Otherwise, you'll think that Jesus is a wimp. Okay, it's divine love looking for a response from the human race. As I was in my usual state, my always lovable Jesus made himself seen, all panting. His breath was fire. And clasping me to himself, he said, why is the breath fire? Because it's the fire of... Yeah, the fire of the spirit or the fire of love. Okay, it's love. and the spirit is love. So he told me, my daughter, I want refreshment for my flames. In other words, he's looking for a response and he's not getting it. I want to pour my love out, but my love is rejected by creatures. You must know that in creating man, I released a quantity of love from within my divinity, which was to serve the primary life of creatures, so that they might be enriched, sustained, strengthened and helped in all of their needs. But man rejected this love, and my love has been wandering from the time man was created. So it's been wandering since the fall, okay? And it keeps going around without ever stopping. Rejected by someone, it runs to somebody else in order to give itself. And as it is rejected, it bursts into sobs of crying. So lack of what they call correspondence here, that word is used all the time, and it means, we say, lack of response. Okay. Causes this sobbing of love. Now, it's a very Italian way of saying things. We would say that this lack of response on the part of the human race causes grief and sorrow to the Lord. That's the way we would say it in the Northern Territories. But the Italians are very emotional, so it's sobs of crying. Okay. So what you have then in the second verse here is the lament of divine love. Now, while my love goes wandering and runs to give itself, if it sees someone who is weak or poor, it bursts into sobs and says to him, ah, if you didn't make me go wandering, if you had given me a place in your heart, you would have been strong and you'd lack nothing. So weak and poor is spiritual. It's not physical. Okay, so it's not, you're not meeting just somebody sitting on the side of the street. In other words, he is what we are not. You remember in John's Gospel, you have John the Baptist saying, I am not the Christ, I'm not the Messiah, I'm not this, I'm not. And Jesus is everything that John isn't. Well, Jesus is everything for us. Okay. And so we read in volume 13 that when you give yourself to him, from poor, you become rich. Remember that? Okay. So if it sees someone else who has fallen into sin, it bursts into sobs. Ah, if you had let me enter your heart, you would not have fallen. For another whom it sees dragged by passions, muddied with earth, love cries and sobs. It repeats to him, ah, if you had taken my love, passions would not have life over you. We would say domination. You know, that they wouldn't be ruling your life. The earth would not touch you. My love would be enough for you in everything. So in each evil of the human race, small or big, love has a sob of crying and continues to go wandering in order to give itself to man. And when in the Garden of Gethsemane, all sins presented themselves before my humanity, each sin carried a sob of my love. We would say a grief, okay? All the pains of my passion, each blow of the lash, each thorn, each wound were accompanied by a sob of my love, because if man had loved, no evil would have come. Lack of love makes all evils and even my very pains germinate. So actually the message there is very simple, that the one gift that the human race has given to God is something God didn't ever have in heaven, which is grief. And so you hear St. Paul saying to the Ephesians, do not grieve the Holy Spirit. You see, so that's language we would understand. The sobbing and crying doesn't get to me at all because I'm not Italian. But we just have to realize what they're actually saying. Okay. And what Jesus is saying to Louisa here is, if the human beings had accepted him, they wouldn't be weak and sinful and dominated by passions and going down the worldly route and allowing Satan to overcome them. That wouldn't happen. So this is God's grief. And of course, it's Jesus' grief because he's the Redeemer. Okay. And then in Gethsemane, all of this came to him. Now, she will tell you, as she does in the Hours of the Passion, I think. It comes up soon, I think. Ah, yeah, it's there in February 9. The tortured body of Jesus is the true portrait of man who commits sin. Do you see, that's the next one. The heading for the next message. that Jesus explained to her that if you look at him on the cross, you're looking at a perfect picture of what a human soul looks like, dominated by sin. Totally a leper from head to foot. Okay.
It's a study as well, Francis, in the future to have a panoramic view of the soul that these paint.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. Oh, if somebody had that kind of talent, it would be wonderful. Yeah, it'd be wonderful. Yeah. So he's talking now about God creating the human race. Okay, in creating man, I acted like a king who wanted to make his kingdom happy. Takes $1 million, euros, whatever you want, and makes it circulate. So there you've got the story of the talents in Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. And you've also got the story of the unjust steward in Matthew 18, verses 23 to 35. That's two of them. Matthew 25, 14 to 30 for the talents. And Matthew 18, verses 23 to 35 for the unjust steward. Okay, remember the unjust steward wouldn't forgive his neighbour at all. So he makes it circulate so that whoever wants it may take it. However, as much as it circulates, only a few take a few cents. Now, he keeps repeating that throughout these volumes. And, you know, if you get to a point where you've got a sufficient grasp of this material, you'll be able to pick up these doctrinal points. Okay, that he says that in the entire history of the human race, very few have actually responded to him. Now, the king is anxious to know whether the peoples are taking the good that he wants to do for them, and he asks whether his million is finished so that he can put in more millions. And the answer he gets is, Majesty, just a few cents have been taken. So the king feels sorrow. This is the grief we give to God, the Holy Spirit, in hearing that his people are not receiving his goods, nor do they appreciate them. So going out into the midst of his subject, he begins to see some covered with rags, some infirm, some going out among them is the incarnation. Covered with rags, some infirm, some starving, some shivering in the cold, some are homeless. In his sorrow, the king bursts into sobs of crying and say, had they taken my money, I'd see none of them dishonouring me covered in rags, but rather well dressed. Nor would I see them infirm, but healthy. I would see not one of them starving and almost dead from hunger. They'd all be full. Had they taken my money, no one would be homeless. And they could very well have built themselves a room and have taken shelter. In sum, for each misfortune he sees in his kingdom, he has a sorrow and a grief, we would say. And he grieves over his million, which in ingratitude of his people rejects. Now, very simply, what is being said here is that we cause the Lord incredible grief when he has given us incredible riches and we're not bothered. You know. So how many people just turn up for what my one-time brother-in-law said was hatch, match and dispatch. They've shown no interest in God at all. You know. So, however, the goodness of the king is so great that in spite of all this ingratitude, he does not withdraw his million. So there's the Lord having paid an incredible price for our redemption. He doesn't withdraw it. He lets it continue to circulate, hoping that other generations might take the good which the others have rejected, so that he may receive the glory of the good that he has done for his kingdom. So you can see that he's the eternal optimist. He thinks another generation might do it. And then he gets disappointed and he says, well, maybe another. We'll try the 21st century when the 20th century did so badly. It's absolutely incredible. He's the eternal optimist. And he said, that's the way I work. I will not withdraw my love, which has been released. It will continue to go wandering. It's grieving. I'm going to call it grieving. Will continue until it finds souls who will take this love of mine down to the last cent. Now, if you've really entered into the divine will, you're taking this love, because the whole 36 volumes is summarized by divine will and love. It's actually that simple. And in so many of the messages, he tells you, love is everything. Okay. So we'll have to get somebody to do a research on love. Okay. He says, love is absolutely everything. So I'll keep it up until I find souls who would take this love of mine. So that's divine love. It's not human love. Down to the last cent, so that my crying or grieving may cease, and I may receive the glory of the dowry of love which I issued for the good of creatures. But do you know who are the fortunate ones who will make the sobbing of my love cease? It's the souls who live in my will. They will take all the love rejected by all the other generations. And so by the power of my creative will, they will multiply it as much as they want and for as many creatures as have rejected it. Then will my grieving cease, and the shout of joy, I would call it, will take its place. And love, satisfied, will give to these fortunate ones all the goods and the happiness which the others didn't want. Now, in the divine will, as you know, you're not allowed to pray for yourself. If you're still praying for yourself, then what Jesus found in Louisa, he can't find in you. There's bits there for yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people who have said to me, but what would happen to me? You know, I mean, someone has to pray for me. And I said, well, if you prayed for all souls, past, present and future, you're included. Mm-hmm. And if you've prayed for all the dying, past, present and future, one day it'll be yourself. It's just that we have to realise that if you pray for the whole, you're included. Okay. But he says much more. He says, if you're praying for all of them and they've not accepted what you've... He'll give it to you. So you actually get tons more than you would ever get by praying for yourself. Yeah. So the emphasis must be, love has to go out. Love has to be gift. So if love is going this way, it's imploding. It's going to die. Okay. So February the 9th, 1922, the tortured body of Jesus is the true portrait of the man who commits sin. Some artist has got to pick that up, because only an artist can put this across. Okay, that this is what sin looks like. You're a leper. You're covered in sores from head to foot. You're nailed. You can't move. You're this, you're that, you're the other. Okay. So, finding myself in my usual state, I was following the hours of the Passion, and I was accompanying my sweet Jesus in the mystery of his painful scourging. He made himself seen with all his flesh, all torn up. His body was stripped, not only of his garments, but also of his flesh, because Louisa says that he looked like a shorn lamb, which was correct, because Isaiah said he wouldn't look human any longer. His bones could be counted one by one. The sight of him was not only harrowing but horrible to look at, so much as to strike fear, fright, reverence and love all at the same time. I felt mute before such a harrowing scene. I would have wanted to do, but who knows what, to relieve my Jesus, but I could do nothing. The sight of his pains gave me death. And Jesus, all goodness, told me, my beloved daughter, look well at me. Because you can look at something that horrifies you and you're not looking at any detail. It's just the whole thing. So he says, look well, make sure you see what you're looking at. That you may know my pains in depth. My body is the true portrait of the person who commits sin. Sin strips him of the garments of my grace. So that's the first thing, why he had to be stripped naked. And I let myself be stripped of my garments so as to give grace back to him once again. So this whole passage is describing the horror of sin. And if someone really wants to make progress spiritually, one of the places you have to visit is horror for sin. Okay. Sin deforms him. And while he is the most beautiful creature that came out of my hands, he continuously in the higher volumes calls man my beloved jewel. Yeah, he continuously calls him that. He becomes from that the ugliest one, disgusting and repugnant. I was the most beautiful of men, and I can say that in order to give beauty back to man, my humanity took on the ugliest form. Look at me, how horrid I am. Isn't that incredible? I let my skin be torn off by dint of lashes. That's Isaiah 53:4. He looked no longer human. To the point that I could no longer recognize myself. Not only does sin take beauty away, but it forms deep wounds, rotten and gangrenous, which corrode the most intimate parts. They consume his vital humours. That's very ancient language, isn't it? It's very difficult to find that in a dictionary today. I can't find it. So everything he does are dead, skeletal works. They snatch from him the nobility of his origin and the light of his reason. He becomes blind. And I, in order to fill the depth of his wounds, let my flesh be torn to shreds. I reduced all of myself to a wound, and by shedding my blood in rivers, I made the vital humours flow back, we would say, into his soul, so as to give life back to him once again. Ah, had I not had the fount of the life of my divinity within me, which, since my humanity died at each pain they gave me, substituted for my life, I would have died from the very beginning of my passion. That's a very important insight. It was the divinity that kept him alive. Because when Louisa describes the agony alone, she says he's dying. Because losing the torrents of blood that he lost in Gethsemane. And then the scourging was so brutal. We all know that the Roman soldiers were brutal because they lived a brutal life. But we have evidence that many a man died raving mad under the scourge. Some of them got heart attacks. They got all kinds of things. To survive a Roman scourging was nearly a miracle. Yeah. And what is being said here is that he wouldn't have survived it unless the divinity was keeping him alive.
They went beyond the beyond in Christ's scourge.
They did, yeah. They went beyond. Rationality was just not in it at all. Yeah,
Pilate was just.
It was even beyond a brutality.
Yeah.
It was beyond bestiality.
Pilate thought that surely this flogging should satisfy him.
Yeah.
Because like, what's left in him?
Yeah.
Are you not satisfied with?
That's
the
right.
That he's in?
But Satan was ruling the roost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's incredible. So he says, now my pains, my blood and my flesh, which fell off in shreds, are always in the act of giving life to man. That's what we pick up when we fuse and make our acts in the divine will. But man rejects my blood so as not to receive life. He tramples upon my flesh so as to remain wounded. Oh, how I feel the weight of ingratitude. Now, throughout the 36 volumes, he describes the human race as the ungrateful ones. That's why I think it's incredibly important for us to show gratitude to him. And throwing himself into my arms, Jesus burst into tears. I clasped him to my heart, but he was crying strongly. What torment to see Jesus crying. I could have wanted to suffer any pain so that he wouldn't cry. So I sympathized with him. I kissed his wounds, I dried his tears, and he, as though cheered, added, do you know how I act? I act like a father who loves his son very much. This son is blind, deformed, and crippled. Think of Luke 15, the prodigal son, because he describes the human race as the prodigal son. Okay. So the blind, deformed and crippled is all spiritual. And his father who loves him to follow, what does he do? He plucks out his own eyes, he tears off his own legs, he tears off his own skin to give everything to his son. I'm happier to remain blind, crippled, deformed myself as long as I see that you, my son, can see and walk and are beautiful. That's divine, that's not human, is it? Oh, how happy is that father in seeing his son look with his eyes. That's the prayer we pray in divine will, isn't it? Look with his eyes, walk with his legs, covered with his beauty. Breathe in my breathing, you know that one? And what would be the sorrow of that father if he saw his son ungrateful, throwing away his eyes, legs and skin, contenting himself to remain as ugly as he was? He said, that's the position I'm in. I took care of everything, but the human race is ungrateful and causes me this bitter grief. It's when it's described, it's almost unbelievable, isn't it? And yet, how would you go out and explain that to somebody down the town? You wouldn't know where to start, would you? Okay. So, at the end of volume 13, Louisa had to be ticked off for not wanting to write everything. Okay. So now in February 14, this is the last one we'll do tonight, Jesus shows his contentment when she actually does what he wants. Okay. Now, Louisa has been writing, but she hasn't been writing everything. As the everything is the bit he wants, you know. As I was in my usual state, my sweet Jesus made himself seen, all pleased and with an indescribable contentment. And I said to him, what is it, Jesus? Are you bringing me good news that you're so content? And Jesus said, my daughter, do you know why I'm so content? All my joy, my feast is when I see you write. Because they're his words, they're creative, they're going to give life to millions and for an entire era, not just for now. And so, of course, he's happy. And the words are going to create new life in everybody. I see my glory, my life, and the knowledge of me that multiplies more and more being inscribed in those written words. It is the light of the divinity, the power of my will, the outpouring of my love. Now, that needs an NB beside it because he's actually saying what is so significant about these volumes. Because she was given a very unusual, new insight into the working of the three persons of the Blessed Trinity and the power of the divine will and the outpouring of his love in the Passion. I see everything written on paper and in each word I feel the fragrance of my perfumes. Very much the language of the Song of Songs. Then I see those written words run into the midst of the people to bring new knowledge, my outpouring of love, the secrets of my will. Oh, how I rejoice. And at this stage, it's gone all over the world. So much so that I don't know what I would do what I would do to you when you write. And as you write new things that regard me, I keep inventing new favours in order to repay you. And I dispose myself to tell you new truths so as to give you new favours. So he explains to her that if she would write more, he'd give her more. And initially she couldn't get that, that it depended on her attempting to write something. And she eventually gets it, that if she even attempts to write, he will then give it to her. And I think it's up around volume 24 where he says to her, you do realise that every word of this came from me. You couldn't have done it because she had no schooling at all. She couldn't have done it at all. but she got so used to it at that stage that, you know, you can get used to anything. So it wasn't registering with her until he actually said it, you know.
But that's like us. The more we study, he gives us.
The more we study, the more understanding he gives. Yeah. And the more you pray it, the more deeper you go into it. Yeah, that's the logic of it. So that's the logic you're going to get in this next paragraph, which I have an NB on. I have always loved more and reserved greater graces for the ones who have written about me. Because They are the continuation of my evangelical life, the spokesmen of my word. That which I did not say in the gospel, I intended to say to those who would write about me. Now, that's very much illustrated in Maria Valtorta, okay, where he calls her another John. I did not finish preaching at that time. I must preach always as long as the generations exist. Now, when you look at the prophets of the Old Testament, the word of the Lord came to me. The more they opened up to that word and the more they proclaimed it, the more they got. That's what you have here as well. This is just the logic of the thing. So Louisa said, my love, to write the truths that you tell me is a sacrifice, but the sacrifice becomes harder and I almost feel no strength to make it when I am obligated and when they force me to write of my intimacies between you and me and of the things that regard me, I don't know what I would do so as not to put the pen on paper. Now, Louisa only had one problem with the writing, and that is she had to write about her relationship with Jesus. That was the bit she couldn't take. And when she heard that it was going to be published, she nearly had a fit. But you see that if we were not looking at this relationship between Louisa and Jesus, how would we know what to do? And if we didn't see where she tripped up and all the rest, how would we know what to do about tripping up? And so while you understand her pain, I would feel the same. At the same time, you have to understand it had to be. And the priests were pretty shrewd there, that nobody would get this just as a theoretical teaching. But to see it as it actually unfolded would enable you to get it. Okay. So Louisa said, you remain always aside. It's always about me. Now, the strange thing is, that is true. No matter how much of that relationship is actually revealed, what you're learning all the time is about how we relate to him. Yeah. That's why we don't put Louisa on a pedestal. And what I do to you and how much I love you and where my love towards creatures actually reach. This will push others to love me so that they too may receive the good that I do to you. So that's precisely it. So, besides, this mixing you and me in writing is also necessary. Otherwise, some might say, to whom did he say this? To whom was he so generous in lavishing his favours? Maybe to the wind or the air? Is it not said that in my life I was so very generous with my mother? That I spoke to the apostles, to the crowds, and that I healed such an infirm one. Therefore, everything is necessary. And be sure that whatever you write, it is always me that you make known all the time, and you make it known more and more. So I'm going to stop there for tonight. It's 15:15, and we'll have our opportunity to share.